Well, it's good to see everybody. You know, you miss a week or two, and it's like we feel we've been gone forever, but it is good to see everybody. Today is not necessarily a message. It's going to be, I hope, somewhat interactive and somewhat helpful and thought-provoking in that one of the concerns that I have is that if we've been in the body for a long time, we take for granted what we learned when we were growing up. And in our case, my children will be a third-generation believer, are a third-generation. And I look back, and Dennis talks about the things you do right, sometimes the things that you don't do as well, is give good biblical fundamentals. And I'd like to cover something today based on 2 Timothy 2:15, where we're told to rightly divide the word of truth. Well, I think part of rightly dividing the word of truth is to understand context. Context. That when we read the word of God, where is it in chronology? Where is it in history? Where is it in the timeline? So that when we're reading something, we can place it in the context of what's going on around it. And so I'm going to start off asking you some questions. Then we're going to look at some charts and talk about them as we go through. And it shouldn't take a long time today, but what's the oldest book in the Bible? Pardon? I hear Genesis is the oldest book. Why would you think it's the oldest book? I'm not talking about when was, all right. Let me clarify. She's right. It starts in the beginning, so you would think, okay.
Well, then that means Matthew.
So, chronology of when they were written. All right, how's that? Let me add that. When was the first book in the Bible? What's the oldest book by based on who wrote them? And when do you think that was written? Around the time of Abraham, which is when? All right, let's jump forward to the New Testament. What's the first book that was written in the New Testament? Not in order. When was the first one written? Believe it or not, it's a toss-up between Galatians and James, written in 49 A.D. You wouldn't think Galatians would be the first book possibly written in the New Testament. Galatians, of all books. Or James, written before the council in 50. Now, thing is, the dates that I'm going to give you are not in concrete. There are, like Usher, who said that the world began, God created things in 4004 B.C. And then we have B.C. and A.D. Christ, according to a lot of calculations, was born in 4 B.C., and yet the calendar was based on before him and after him. And it's now it's before the Common Era and after the Common Era, but it still goes back to this time around the birth of the Messiah. So what I'd like to do today is show some things to help us understand context, and it'll be surprising, I think, as we go through here and look at the contemporaries of some of these books. Look at the timeline and how much of history is encompassed by the book of Genesis and how much is encompassed by other books. The Life Application Bible that I have, each book starts with the date that it was written. I've gone to a few other websites, some of the other church groups that carry our same beliefs, and by and large, everybody's close in these dates, and then you get every now and then some timelines that say, no, start at 10,000 B.C. with the, you know, Jericho was built in 8,000 B.C., and I struggle with that. Because one of the challenges that we have in our belief system is that there was allotted 6,000 years for mankind, and then the millennium would be a 7,000th year. And that's why a lot of people believe that we're close to the end time, because there are some calendars that start at 3969. Some say the beginning was 4004. Some say 4024. So the bottom line is, we don't really know where Genesis 1:1 or 1:2 or 1:3 really was in our calculating times. And to complicate things is, a lot of the Hebrew calendar is based on a 30-day month, and we know that the earth revolves around the sun in 365 and a quarter and some change. And so we have all these issues of months, years, and at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter whether the creation was at 4,000 or 4,004, 4,024, or 3,969 based on our current calendar. What I'm trying to show today is some context. Some context of, when we read a book, what part of a timeline of mankind is it talking about, and who was there and what was going on? And I think that will help enlighten us, because I also have something that I'd like to go through that shows dates when supposedly the books were written. And I think we would have a very different understanding of Scripture, especially in the New Testament, if we had the books in chronological order. Because then they're writing about events in the time frame in a sequence, especially Paul's writings. Paul's are all messed up, so when you read them the way they're in our Bible, it's not the way they were written in actuality, so references to things take on meaning, and missing letters and letters that he wrote to so-and-so, you can follow the context. So we won't spend a lot of time, but Sebastian, would you put this up? Now, if you go do a web search for Bible timelines, you'll be buried. Now, this one, I think, is from oyundi.com. It's from India, and I don't know what religion they're at, but it was one of the ones that I thought, this is really cool, and the graphics were really good. And so, if you will... Now, actually go back up. Over here in the left, it says the 6 days of creation, okay? And they're equating it, when you scroll down, to 4,000 B.C. They're on the timeline that somewhere around 4,000 before Christ, the 6 days occurred. Not 10,000, not 3,000. And for most people that I know, and it's my belief that it's close enough, somewhere around there. And so what we find, it starts the 6 days of creation, and then we've got Adam here starting off, and it says he lived 930 years. So if you start at 4,000 and you go 930 years, guess what? That puts you at 3,070, right? So when you come down, you see down here that Adam in the timeline, if you're accepting 4,000. And then, of course, here's where it's found. He was 130 when he had Seth. I believe that's what it's telling us. And Seth was 105 when he had Enos. And Enos was 190. And so you can see for a while, just by the way it says so-and-so was so old and he begat so-and-so at this age, and then that son begat so-and-so at a certain age, that you can start stringing along. And as you go up a little bit, Sebastian, you see that Noah was born when Lamech was 182. And then all of a sudden, Methuselah, being the oldest man who ever lived, we don't know how long he would have lived because the flood came. So what we're talking about, though, in Scripture is that we have almost 1,650 years of Scripture, or of man's history, accounted for in really six chapters of Genesis. Right? There's really not much other than so-and-so begat so-and-so, and then it talks about Noah, and it talks about the flood and the earth and all the bad things that were going on. And so, in context, we have 1,650 years of mankind's history covered in the first several chapters of the book of Genesis. So let's look at how far Genesis goes. goes. So would you slide over, Sebastian? You can see the book of Genesis. When you start getting into, all right, Shem and Ham and Japheth, they came through after, and this is just following the line of Shem. And so he was 100 and had our facts that. And you can follow through down, and Terah, guess whose son Terah, or who he had as a son, right? Abraham. So what we have here is 350 plus years after the flood, we have the birth of Abraham. So Abraham shows up on the scene about 2,000 years after the beginning. Just to get you a sense of when you read about Abraham, look at all the history, 1/3 of mankind's existence. Put it in context, right? 1/3 of the history of man on earth that occurred up to the time of Abraham. My grandfather's 96 years old. Going strong, we're shooting for 100, we're going to have a big birthday party, and yet when I talk with him about the life he's lived and the things he's seen since 1917, it boggles my mind all the events that have gone on in his lifetime. Can you imagine living 900 years and see what would happen over 900 years? 900 years ago, it was the 1100s. They're heading into the Black Death. It was the Dark Ages. It was horrible. And look what's come through in 900 years. I look at the 96 years he's lived, from biplanes and Model Ts to men on the moon, places that were sending stuff out of the solar system, the computers. Just think of the technological advances that we've experienced in his 96 years. So we come in 353 years, you go from the flood to Abraham. And we're still in the book of Genesis. So 1/3 of mankind's history is in the book of Genesis. And then it goes on beyond, because as you slide it forward or further, if you would, Sebastian, here's that question that Job, depending on who you read, they feel was in the patriarchal period. That's what Ryan said, around Abraham's time, because Abraham is 175. I've read different things that they said, and we go up, Sebastian? Nope, the other way. That Abraham's around 2000 B.C. A lot of people think the book of Job came in around 1800 B.C., That's when Job lived, because of where his friends were from, how he sacrificed for the family. It's more patriarchal. There's a whole bunch of history about why. And so Job may or may not be there. It could be, but it's in that time period. So when you read the book of Job, think of him as being a contemporary with whom? Abraham. And so that, I hope, gives you context when you're starting to read things, that all this that we're reading about in Genesis covers a lot of history. And so you see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. Now if you will, and you can see right here, this line is 1706 B.C. over here where Levi, Kohath, all those are born. 1900 B.C. We now go up, or go down, I guess I'm confusing. And so here you can see some of the connections on the timeline of Abraham. Now what I think is interesting is that, you know, Abraham is this line over here. Eber lived a long time. Selah lived. Arphaxad, Shem, all lived at the same time that Noah or Abraham was around. So you have, as it were, descendants from before the flood or during the flood, all living still with Abraham. So there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of information, I believe, would have been passed on, because Abraham could see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe nine generations? Because when you're living how many hundreds of years? My grandfather is 96. He's got five generations alive right now. So what if you're 296? How many generations you could have? And if they were alert and functioning like he was, you could pass on and say, yeah, I remember being on the ark. Let me tell you what it was like. Let me tell you how we did it. Let me tell you what it was like for the 500 years. Or, you know, Shem was 600. But my father Noah was 500 when he had me. Or 502. And let me tell you what my dad Noah told me. And he could be talking down here to Abraham. So there's a lot that I believe could get passed down, but the context I'm trying to give you is when you read all these names and you lay them out, they were alive at the time of Abraham. So knowledge was not lost necessarily at the flood. It was just carried through a few people. Anybody have any comments or questions or thoughts on that? Joanna?
A lot of times people say that things might have gotten lost, you know, because there were so many generations between it. But really, Noah could have been talking to Terah about, like, some of this stuff. Or, like, because he was alive during the same time as him.
Right. Look at that. There's 353 years that all these guys were alive up to the time of Abraham. Now, not that many of them, 1, 2, 3, 4, went beyond. But Terah, Nahor, Sarah, I mean, all the way up to Noah. Anybody have any questions? Rick? Or comments?
Yeah, you know, we're surrounded by evolutionists, and we're personally, I haven't done that much research, you know, going back, but where do they come up with this idea that our ancestors were you know, they ate a lot of fruit and nuts and seeds and they lived like 12,000 BC? Where does all this come from?
Tell you what, that's a really big topic that I'm going to say, let's hold that thought, because that's not the purpose of what we're doing today, but that's a very interesting topic to look into, and at the end of the day, you'll have to come to your own conclusion about what happened before Genesis 1-2, because there's a gap theory that's out there, so I'll just say it's interesting, but it'd take a whole nother message. Maybe we'll do that. But the issue that I'm trying to point out is the continuity of the biblical names, that when you translate it into real life, that here Abraham was alive with Shem, who had been on the ark, with his son and his son and his son, and that Terah, his father, was alive with Noah. And so there had to be knowledge imparted, especially if there was the way of God being taught. And it wasn't just for a year or two. Look at how long Shem lived, 500 years after the flood, so that Job could be a righteous man, because depending on where you really put him, he could have been in line with some of these others. And again, this is, it's speculation, okay? But I don't think we're off by 500 years, because this part of the biblical record is pretty clear. And here, look where the Tower of Babel came in the days of Peleg, right? Right here, it says in Genesis 10:25, right in there. Then Peleg lived in chapter 11. He's referencing 18 and 19, and it keeps going on down. So all of a sudden, the confusion of the languages, the separation of the peoples, this is all going on before Abraham came around. So it was in this point in time Yeah, the battery, I think, is going dead. You got another pointer? Dennis, yeah, in your magic bag there. Go ahead.
I don't know if you can answer this, but I guess I would speculate, based upon transportation at that time and the way families remained in communities, that everything we're seeing, especially Noah's descendants, stayed relatively in the same vicinity.
Well, this goes back to now the charts that I think I spoke here and showed you the genealogy of Abraham, and there were some other charts. It's how the earth got divided into the races, the 70 nations that they talk about. So the Middle East was the birthplace of humanity. So from there, everything spread out, and I'm sure a lot of those nations that are there started there, and others spread out. It's a hard one to follow, but so I would assume, yes, that where Shem lived, it would be natural for Arphaxad and the others to stay in that area. And where that was exactly, was it around Jerusalem? I don't know. Dennis?
Get on the train or jet. But for the most part, most people have stayed generally locally, unless they were, navigating to explore. But most until when? The horses, not even the horse. Steam engines and all that, that's not even the Vikings, maybe they were, but for the most part, people stayed localized and they expanded because of population.
Mm-hmm. So look up here. Just these are some of the big blocks that are found, and it's trying to give you, again, down here we see the sojourn of Israel. Remember the time that they were in, 430 years? So right down here, because if you make the slide go up, Sebastian, you see that Abraham said, there was a prophecy that God told Abraham that for 430 years, your children, your descendants would be in a foreign land. And then a little later, he said, for 400 years, and when they left the Exodus, it said to that self same day that God had given that prophecy. So in here, and of course, Joseph lived right in the middle, because it wasn't until a pharaoh after Joseph, or how many pharaohs, said, I don't know who this is, but look at these Israelites. They're like multiplying like rabbits or ants or sand of the sea or something, and we're going to put them in captivity. So for a lot of that time they were in Egypt, they were not in slavery. When Joseph was around, they were exalted. They lived in the land of Goshen. They were herdsmen. The Egyptians didn't want to have anything to do with herdsmen. They were autonomous. And that's why they multiplied and multiplied. So, again, the whole point is to give context. And we're still in the book of Genesis. And now we've gotten 250 years of mankind's history. Context for Genesis. There's an awful lot of history that Genesis has covered. And so it isn't until, as we go up, you see here, Exodus, but it's not until up here on timeline, 430 years later, that the book of Exodus comes about. Because that chronicles the leaving of the children of Israel out of Egypt. So let's drop down, if we would. You see Exodus here. Then there's Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. What are the first five books of the Bible called? The Pentateuch. Or the Torah, the books of the law. And they were written by Moses. So let's come down here. And here's what I think is a really critical date that we need to understand. Moses and the children of Israel is about 1500 BC. So you have Abraham Terra, those guys around 2000 BC. You have the flood over here. According, they got it real specific, 2349. They got it down to do you see what I'm saying for context? Do we understand the context of what's going on? And so Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, time of Joshua, all are in a real tiny window here around 1500 BC. We don't know when Joshua was written. We don't know when the book of Judges was written. We don't know when the book of 1 Samuel was written. There's kings. Nobody can prove, because here's a challenge for all of you to go out and do. That right now, there is no archaeological, historical evidence, non-biblical, that can prove King David existed. Yet we hear about the city of David. We hear about that the line of David will never end. And yet mankind in archaeological history can't prove King David existed. How long was King David's kingdom? Pardon? Well, King David, like the King David that slew Saul. How long was he king? 40 years, 7 years before he united them, and then 33 after the united monarchy. So you have King David in this time period that, he's way over here actually, but he's only 40 years in mankind's history. He's a little sliver on this chart. But what happens is then we have Judges. Joshua and Judges. Joshua is when they come into the promised land. Then Joshua dies, and then Judges are raised up, right? All of this is going on in this 500-year period between 1500 BC and 1000. So you have Judges and Ruth. Then you have Samuel. Samuel's story is that it's in his time, because Eli goofed it up and didn't teach his sons, and the high priests and the priests were profaning God, and so Samuel took over, and Samuel didn't teach his sons either. And then people said, "We're fed up with this. We want a king." Remember the story? And God says, "I want to be your king." And people said, "No, we want a king." And he said, "Okay, here's what you're going to get when you get a king." And so that's right in here, this area of Samuel. And because it starts out with the Chronicles of the Kings and the Annals of the Kings, that's where we get 1 and 2 Chronicles, 1 and 2 Kings. Here's what's going on around 1000 BC. In there we have Elijah and Elisha. And again, the whole intent of this is say, as we're moving closer, that we have all these things starting to get condensed into smaller and smaller periods, where we started out 2,000 plus years of mankind's history was before the flood. Before the flood. So a third of what happened was before the flood. So everything we're really reading and talking about is after the flood, after Moses at 1500 BC. Now we get close to 1000 BC and we start getting the kings. So the judges, and this is where it gets fuzzy, because the judges aren't able to be stacked up. There are gaps in the timeline where people, so we don't know how many years that was, because all it would say is, and God raised up a judge and he was a judge for 40 years. Then there was an 80-year period of peace, and then the Philistines oppressed them. Then there was another judge. So you go through, you know, Deborah and Gideon and Samson, or I got them all out of order. But the point is, there's judge after judge after judge until we get to the time where they say, Samuel, you're getting old. We don't want you to be the judge anymore. And so the kings come around, and this is where it's about 1000 BC. And so when you look here, David is only a 40-year period. Solomon, I think, was only, if you go up to the top, 37 years, I think, he reigned. But look what the books of the Bible now that are being created here as well. The book of Psalms, it's interesting. Everybody says, no, they were David. They should have been 1,000 B.C. But there are 120 Psalms? 150 Psalms. 150 Psalms. 73 were written by David. Asaph wrote 12. The sons of Korah wrote 9. Solomon wrote 2. Heman with the sons of Korah, Ethan, and Moses each wrote 1. 51 Psalms are considered anonymous. So when you look at the Psalms, we attribute them basically to David, but he wrote less than half of them. And so what they're saying is that the collection of Psalms started way early from the Exodus and went through. So that's 500 years of Psalms. Can you prove it or not? I don't know. But not all the Psalms were by David, and not all of them, 51 of them, one-third of the Psalms, they don't know when they were written or who wrote them. And then all of a sudden you get into the end of Solomon. You have all these kings and all the years that they lived. See, or their reigns. So we have another 387 years after Solomon. That's called the Northern Kingdom. Then there's 20 kings of the tribe of Judah and Levi and Benjamin. And down here, after Solomon. So when we read about Saul and David and Solomon, we're really looking at a very small slice of history. But they're all around 1,000 B.C., and then we get the divided kingdoms after Solomon dies. And now look at who's writing at the same time that Chronicles and the Kings were written. We have up here Nahum, Amos, Micah, Joel, Isaiah, Jonah, Hosea. They're contemporaries. They're contemporaries. So they might be in different spots. Some would be talking about the Northern Kingdom, some would be talking about the Southern Kingdom. But the point is to show this is what's going on in this time frame, and this takes us down to the ends of the Chronicles, the end of the Kings, where now Obadiah, Habakkuk, Ezekiel, Zephaniah, Daniel, Jeremiah, Lamentations, all those books are written. If you go back up here, see Daniel's taken right here. It's at the end, 387. That's when he was taken to Babylon. And then remember, he's praying, oh God, that the 70 years that were written about, well, he's part of that. And so here's the end of the Babylonian captivity. The first temple was destroyed up in here. This time frame right here is 588, 587 is when the first temple was destroyed. So 500 years have passed from David being the first king to where Israel, Judah, was taken into captivity. And they don't really exist anymore except in captivity in the remnants. And then as you look further, we get into Haggai, Zechariah, Ezra, Esther, Nehemiah, Malachi, all occurring here towards the end. And that is in the mid to early 400s. A lot of people think that Malachi was the last book written in about 430 B.C., and so what that means is there's really 430 years that there were no prophets, there were no books written, there was chaos, emptiness, I'm not sure what you want to call it, but there's a big gap between when Malachi was written and when the New Testament starts occurring. So this right here, if you can go up, you know, it tries to correlate the 490 years that from Nehemiah going back to establishing the temple in Jerusalem. Remember that story of Ezra and Nehemiah? And and that's 454 B.C. You have 537 B.C. These are all big names, big dates in history. And again, the whole point of this is to show that there's a big gap from when the second temple was built. Let's go back up. And then Titus destroyed the temple in 70 A.D., the temple of Herod. So what we get is the time period of Daniel, Christ's ministry, his birth, the New Testament time. All of this occurred in 33 years, and the temple was destroyed in AD 70. Anybody have any thoughts or questions on that? Again, it's trying to show that we've now covered 4,000 years of mankind. Ryan. Yeah, the Maccabees were in the 200s when Antiochus Epiphanes. Yeah, they were a huge thing in Jerusalem. 165, I think, is when, minus 165, somewhere in there, the Maccabean revolt, Judas Maccabeus and Antiochus Epiphanes that we read about in Daniel, who set up a statue. He's offered pig's flesh on the altar, etc., etc. I would encourage people to read some of those extra biblical books like the Maccabees. There's a lot of history there. I wouldn't call them scripture, but there's a lot of history, and it tells you what went on in those time periods. And Ryan's right, that would be in this gap in here. Yes.
What's good to understand is if we read the Bible on two dimensions, a single, you think, oh, okay, Nahum's done, Obadiah's done. When really, there's a synergy occurring, and God's working. Like we think the church is here in Church of God Fellowship, Lansing, and then we have a history, but things are also occurring other parts, even in Canada, probably. But you know what I'm saying? In all parts of the world, things are occurring at the same time.
Okay, so as an analogy of today, everybody's familiar with the BBC, right? You ever listen to BBC World News? Fascinating, love it. So let's say God's equivalent of the BBC, or the BBC's the equivalent of God. They're getting reports from all over the world from people what's going on. Well, God is saying, I've got prophets all over Israel. I've got them in Babylon. I've got people all over, and I'm inspiring them to write. And they're concurrent. They're going on at the same time. It's not like there was Daniel, then there was Ezekiel, and then there was Jeremiah. And you can see that, look at all these guys that are going on at the same time. Jeremiah, Daniel, Zephaniah, Ezekiel, Habakkuk, Obadiah. They're all going on, but they're in different spots, and they're all writing different things. So that when you start looking at context, they're talking in the same time period of what's going on. And I would encourage you to get a chart like this. That I think it's a good one. I printed it off just in black and white, but I think it's very helpful to get a big picture. And that takes us up to the New Testament. Because here's something, let's stop there. Sebastian, that other, the second PDF, I don't know if that one, that one's before. And this is a really tough one to, because here's where, this one's really more confusing, I think, than it. It's trying to give some of the events in prophecy and stuff that occurred after the time of Christ, and it deals a lot with what the popes are doing and what is going on in persecution and where the Catholic Church came in the Eastern Roman Empire. It's dealing more with external things. So let's go to this other, the where were the books from? We'll conclude here. Now, this is something that you can get off of UCG website. You can get other websites that give. No, put it all up there if you would. The printed page, yeah. Okay, this is in order of how they're in our Bible today. But if you were to read the New Testament in order, you would start with Galatians, you would go to James, then you would read 1 Thessalonians, then you would read 2 Thessalonians, then you would read Mark, then you would read 1 Corinthians, then you would read 2 Corinthians, then you would read Romans. Do you see the sense of how our Bible is not laid out at all in the order in which they were written? And I think you'd get a different flavor. So one of the things you could do is just go through. I would encourage you as a Bible study, read the books in order based on this list. There's this really cool tool called the Internet.
I know, but how do you, what do you look,
okay,
what did you
I
look
typed
it up
in
as?
Bible timelines for the charts. And the second one, I typed in a really tough question, when were the books of the Bible written? And this is actually on the UCG website. And there are lots of others, and everybody is not necessarily totally in harmony that okay, this might be. Was James right here before Galatians or at the same time? Two different guys writing two different books in two different locations. But I would encourage everybody to get context from Scripture, is go get a chart like this so that when you read a book of the Bible, you know where it is and what's going on. Or to do something special like read the New Testament in chronological order. I think it will be very interesting and it will connect the dots a little bit better. So that's really, go ahead, Joanna, what I wanted to cover today as an exhortation.
Just a question. There's been like recent research done on finding, they found like a bunch of scrolls and some vases in a like cave in, I don't remember where it was, but it's a recent like thing that they like analyzed them and all this stuff, and they're placing the times of the scrolls because they're like of the Gospels, and they believe that they were being sent to Rome during the time, but that the people that were carrying them were killed because there was a whole bunch of skeletons and stuff. But anyways, they dated the scrolls to being firsthand accounts because they're trying to show that it's like that they are valid, like historical evidence. And in order for it to be valid historical evidence, it has to be a firsthand account. And so I don't know where the process is at right now, but they were saying that they were written within 100 AD. So I don't know how that would affect the way that it's up there, but anyways.
Well, some of the books, like John, the Apostle John, because of the historical records of Polycarp and others who were famous church fathers in the hundreds, they were alive when John was alive, so they got a first-hand account from the Apostle John, who was alive with the Messiah, but he was a very old man. What we haven't done is another one of those timelines of people's lives. But John overlapped Polycarp and others who then went into 165 AD and then somebody else. So they're getting firsthand from someone who saw the Messiah, who walked with him, who ate with him, who saw the crucifixion, who whatever, past 100 AD. So a lot of these dates can be fairly verified by Josephus or Tacitus and some others that are historians that call out this happened here, and this was the person. And so, again, my intent today was to help us get a grasp that 4,000 years of mankind up to the Messiah, over 2,000 of it was up to the flood. So there's a lot of stuff that can go on in a short amount of time. And other than the Maccabees and what went on in Jerusalem, there was a 400-year-plus period where really they were waiting for the return of the Messiah, the coming of the Messiah. So anybody have any more questions? Because we'll, Dennis, or comments?
I'm just thinking, for me, this is really helpful. Not that I haven't seen something similar, but in a discussion here, you know, some people, some groups tend to be focused on their own, that this is the work of God. When we look at the big picture, as you mentioned earlier already, the work of God is occurring all over. And, you know, the time in Jerusalem when they needed help, they were asking for donations to help that church. So they are maybe formalized more because we didn't have all the different names. But now the same thing exists, though. We can do the same thing. As we do our thing, there are other people doing their things. And as we see the need, like with Jamerson, we help where we can. And it's, I'm just seeing more and more that, yeah, we're a little spot here, but there are others doing it, and we need to make sure that we are united in spirit as we help one another, instead of saying, well, we're the one and only. I joke about it, about the feast. That's probably true, but anyway, but you know what I mean, that we help each other and grow together.
Right. Anybody else? Joanna?
But like the churches in Revelation, we don't want to be the ones that are naked and don't even know about it.
Right. And if you wanted to lay those churches out, they were actual seven churches on a mail route in Asia Minor. They really were there. They really existed. And the Romans had a mail route that went to those seven churches. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Let's sing.